Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the CX Goalkeeper podcast. Your host, Greg, will have smart discussions with friends, experts, and thought leaders on customer experience, transformation, and leadership. Please follow this podcast on your preferred platform. I am sure you will enjoy the next episode with the guest I selected for you. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the CX Goalkeeper podcast. I love doing recording this podcast, and today the topic is really brand love, and I'm keen to discuss about Professor Aaron Ahuvia. Hi, Aaron, about this topic. How are you today?
Doing great, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
It's a great pleasure to have you and to discuss about this really interesting topic. But before we kick off the discussion around your latest book, The Things We Love, How Our Passion Connects Us and Make Us Who We Are, from Aaron Ahuvia, we would like to learn more about you. And therefore, could you please introduce yourself?
Sure. So I'm a professor at the University of Michigan. I am a marketing professor. I also teach in the human-centered design program at the School of Engineering. So I have sort of a foot in all of those worlds. I do consumer research and consumer focus, and a lot of work on customer experience. You see, it's very central to my work in marketing. I developed this idea of brand love about 30 years ago. At the time I was doing it, it was the first serious scientific research that people had done on the topic. Lots of people had done work on why people are attracted to things, and people had done work on love and interpersonal relationships, but nobody had really looked at love as a way of understanding our relationship with objects in a serious way. So that got started about 30 years ago when I was a PhD student at Kellogg. Now, if you put brand love into Google Scholar, you'll get over 20,000 different papers and conference papers and books about this. So really, I'm very pleased at how it's caught on and taken off. And that's because it is, from a managerial perspective, very important. But as we're going to discuss today, it's not the only way to do things. I know that people tend to come on these podcasts and everyone's got their solution and they think your solution is the solution for everybody. I don't think that's right. I think that it can be very valuable, but it's not the only way to be successful.
Thank you, Aaron. And before we deep dive in this topic, which values drive you in life?
I was at a conference and I told someone that I was doing research on love. It was at a design conference. And they thought that that was a joke because it didn't make any sense to them why someone would be talking about love at a design conference. And they said, oh, yeah, love, like peace, love, and happiness. And it occurred to me that actually, in all seriousness, all of my work has been about peace, love, and happiness. I've done a lot of research on happiness and also the relationship between materialism and consumption, how to be happy. And I've done a lot of activism around peace that actually is related to my marketing work, because as you all know, customer experience is really about understanding other people. And I think that a lot of problems that we have, they're not all due to misunderstanding, but a lot of them could be helped if people understood each other better. So some of the focus that I have on understanding people really transfers over to a lot of work I do on intergroup relationships and peace.
Thank you very much. It's really interesting. And I was doing some research, but it's not only the research that you are doing in the academic, because you were also at a really important show, Oprah Winfrey, and you speak and discussed about this topic. Can you please share your experience with her?
Yeah, so when I first started doing this work, the reason I started studying brand love was that before I was doing this work, I did some research on dating and dating services. And it was very interesting. In order to understand dating services, I needed to understand how people fell in love. And that was the origin of the brand love work. But Oprah Winfrey was very interested in dating services. So I got to go on her show and I was talking about some of my research about singles ads. That was a lot of fun.
And sorry, I need to ask this question. How successful were you at dating?
At dating? I was, you know, those who can do, those who can't teach, as the saying goes. I eventually was successful. I'll tell you the great insight. If you are out there, you're dating, there is an insight that I will share with you, which is when I met my wife, the person who is now my wife, we hit off. There was definitely some chemistry, but I was convinced that I would not see her again because I lived in Chicago. I thought she lived in New York, which turned out not to be exactly true, but I was under that impression. And we went out just to have dinner together, just to spend some time because we enjoyed each other, but there was no thought of it going anyplace. And that was by far the best date I ever had in my life. And it led to this relationship. We've been married over 30 years now. I think part of the reason I succeeded at that is that I really believed all I'm here to do is have fun tonight. Like I'm never going to see this person again. All I want to do is like enjoy their company at dinner. And I think that made me relate to her better. So that would be my advice for anyone who's dating out there. When you go on a date, try and pretend, try and convince yourself that you're not here to ascertain if this is the person for you for your future life. You're just here to have a good time at dinner or at lunch or whatever you're doing. And I think the whole date will go better.
Thank you very much for this important tip. And to the audience, if you have feedback, please share that with Aaron or with me and we can share the stories. But now, coming to the topic, brand love, could you please explain what's behind this topic?
Okay, so brand love is the term that I use for a sort of positive emotional connection to a product, a possession, service, a brand of anything someone wants to market. And there's a couple things that you have to know right off. The first is sometimes we use the word love to mean only a very intense emotion. But in the context of brand love, it really covers a variety of intensities. And I have a measure that we can use to scientifically figure out how much brand love is going on. And it goes from very strong to non-existent. You don't need to love a brand, get customers to love your brand as much as they love their spouse or their children. You just need to get them to love your brand more than they love the competition. And that's a lot easier. So a lot of times people get put off because they think this only applies to like absolutely these raving, intense emotions. And really, it's not. It's just sort of any sort of emotional connection that goes beyond the practical. The other thing you need to know about brand love is that it's qualitatively different from the way people normally think about objects. And this, I think, is the big insight and something that I didn't even realize for the first couple decades that I was doing this research. I was had the view that many other people had that if you just thought enough good things about a brand, that would constitute brand love. That it was sort of just the same kind of good feelings you might normally have a brand or good thoughts you might have about a product, just more of them. That's not the case. If you think of the human brain as analogous to a factory, you might say that there's two different assembly lines and objects and products get processed in one assembly line, people get processed in another assembly line. Love is a feature that you can only install on the assembly line that the people are on. You can't install that feature on the other assembly line. It's just not there. Right? So if you want to get consumers to have any kind of emotional attachment to your brand, whether you want to call it brand love, you're going to say you're going to create a super fan, I don't care what term you want to use for it, brand attachment. In order to get that, you've got to get the consumer thinking about the brand the way they would normally think about a product. Normally think about a person. So back to the factory analogy, you've got to get them to, you know, take that product and process it on the assembly line that, you know, normally builds human relationships. And that's a little bit complicated to do.
But I really like what you're saying. And perhaps it's the question that popped to my mind is, are there then people able to translate the products that are buying, taking, for example, Apple, Nike, and all these very brands that they have raving fans? Are they able to translate that into like a personification, or what's your view on that?
So there's basically three different ways that you can get a brand or a product, get the human brain to think about it as if it was a person. The first way is through a personification, through anthropomorphism. And a lot of times people do this with their cars. You name the car. You can see if you name a product, it's a really good indication that you're doing this. So if your car has a name, clearly you are doing this. And people name all kinds of things. And then your brain starts thinking about it in this human way. So that's one way to do it. And that can be very powerful. And in my research, I found that has extremely powerful effects. And it's one of the reasons we're seeing this so much more in marketing and advertising, that marketers are encouraging customers to think about, to anthropomorphize their products and brands in this way. But that's not the most common ways that people do it. The second, much more common way is that you get the customer in their mind to connect the product very closely with some actual human being. So it could be, for example, people who love Ferraris. They have just, a lot of them are very, very interested in Enzo Ferrari, the founder of that company. And they have kind of a thing about him, and they connect him to the car, and the car is sort of his spirit. And so there's that strong connection with Apple. It was with Steve Jobs. But it could be a spokesperson. It could be a celebrity. With Nike, it's a lot of the athletes that endorse their products become the person that it's connected to. In a lot of contexts, it's a service provider. So if you go and get your hair cut regularly by the same person, you have a connection to that business, the haircutting business, but really it's a connection to this human being that works there. And that could be a bartender, it could be a salesperson, it could be a service person. A lot of times in business-to-business contexts, there's very little brand loyalty. But to the extent that there is any at all, it's because there's a human connection between the salespeople for one company and the buyers for the other. So in that case, there can be a little bit of brand love going on, or this sort of emotional connection. But again, it's because of a human connection. There's a podcast, not to mention one of your competitors, but there's a podcast that I think about sometimes called The Business of Customer Love. And at the beginning of that podcast, they always ask people, can you give an example of where you experienced customer love firsthand? If you listen to that, you'll notice that like so often, the person will start off by saying, well, there was this person, this service person. I was at the airlines, and the flight attendant did this really great thing for me. So there's some sort of a connection to a person. So that's the second main way. The third big way has to do with the consumer's own identity. And that is that if the brand of the product can become symbolic of the person's identity, then they automatically start making it a part of themselves. They're a human being. They think about it in these human ways. And you can see that when people defend a brand online. If someone goes online and says something critical of a brand and other people rush to its defense, well, if what you find is emotionally what that person is feeling, the consumer, is they're feeling offended. They feel personally offended because somebody was criticizing this brand. Why would you be offended? You're only really offended if you yourself are criticized. It's because they do feel like they themselves are being criticized in this context. So getting the brand to be connected to the consumer's identity is the third big way that that happens. And so if you can do one of those three things, either get the consumer to see the brand or the product itself as human, or connect the brand to some other important person in the consumer's mind, or get the consumer to see the brand as part of their identity, then brand love is a very viable and potentially very profitable strategy for your company. If none of these three things are going to happen, then you need to think about another strategy.
It's really interesting. And one side note, I don't see other podcasters as competitors, but they are an enrichment because they are doing their job, sharing information, news, and so on. But this is a side comment. What you're saying, I really like that, and I always use soccer, and I know that at your university, it's football very important, but I think you can relate to what I'm saying. I am really an avid soccer fan, and I'm for a specific team. And for me, this team is an entity. If the president is not good or one player is not good, I say, I don't care, because in 1, 2, 3 years, they're not here anymore. But this entity, this team is there. And I think this is the first personification. The second one is really using soccer players, the best one. And if you score a goal when you're playing with your friends, you say, I am the one and I scored the goal and so on. And this is a great guy. And the last thing is, I always find excuses if my preferred team lose a match. It's the referee, it's the other team, the next time will be better. It's not so bad, but please don't speak bad about my team and so on. And I think this is extremely interesting, because your explanation, I can really relate also with this soccer example.
Oh, absolutely. And sports are one of the great ways that you can see brand love in action. I mean, sports fans absolutely love their teams. There's no question about that. Another place, and you can see for exactly what the reasons you were saying, right? It has all three of these kinds of properties to it and creates that deep emotional connection. There's this term superfans, which I think is an excellent term. And a lot of people are doing really good work around that, really interesting work. One thing that is worth noticing with regard to superfans and sort of turning your customers into superfans is, well, what's the origin of that? Right? Who are the original superfans? People are sports superfans of athletes or teams. They're superfans of musicians. They're super involved with actors or for, you know, movie stars or something along these lines. That's where the sort of the original comes from. And you'll see that people are very naturally superfans of those kinds of brands. Well, what all those brands have in common? They're all actually people, right? So superfan is another word for love. It's just a different word for love. And it's naturally directed at these people. And then people say, okay, but I want my sneakers, you know, or my phone. I want it to have superfans in the same way. Well, it's not a coincidence that people are naturally superfans of humans, and that you've got to do a lot of work to get them to be super fans of a sneaker, right? And part of that work is figuring out how to take what the way they think about people and get them to think about your brand in the same way.
And it's extremely interesting. Now that you're saying that, I think it's quite clear that it's a sales strategy to have people buying more stuff, more retention, and so on. What are the best examples that you are using to explain brand love? Do you have some companies that you often use as a case study?
Well, the number one that everyone thinks of is Apple. And Apple, of course, is, in my research, is the most loved brand. Apple is very serious about brand love. They, inside the company, they measure brand love. They talk about brand love when they design a product or a store or an advertisement. They're very conscious about how is this going to create more brand love. And so the first lesson from Apple is that if you want brand love for your company, you need to start thinking seriously about brand love, because, you know, part of the reason they do so well at it is they actually try, and you're not going to win if you don't try. So that's one thing I give from them as an example. Nike, of course, is another great example. And Nike, one of the things that's really interesting, if you go on Amazon, there's a movie called Air, which is about the creation of the Air Jordan shoe. And that movie is a great example of creating brand love, because the Air Jordan really catapulted Nike. Everyone thinks about Nike as this enormous sports brand. But before the Air Jordan shoe, it was kind of an also-ran, you know, it was a decent-sized company, but it was not the leader in the sports area by any stretch of the imagination. And the creation of the Air Jordan shoe, people just loved that shoe. They were passionate about it. They paid enormous amounts of money for it, became a collector. It had, you know, really ignited this passion around the brand. And the whole thing is about, how does Nike convince Michael Jordan, actually working through his mother, convince, you know, his mother to convince him that he should endorse the shoe. And they build the whole shoe completely around him. Like the whole thing is just based all around him and connected to him. And they have this line in the movie, they say three different times. So they make sure that you didn't miss it the first two times. And the line is, a shoe is just a shoe until somebody steps into it. And in this case, that somebody is Michael Jordan. And that's brilliant because it's got to be a good shoe. It had all this innovative technology, but all the innovative technology in the world is not going to create brand love until there's a human being, in this case, Michael Jordan, who steps into the shoe. So those are good examples. There's one other aspect to this, though, that I really want to mention because we're talking about customer experience here. And that is the centrality of customer experience in this whole thing. So there's really three main ingredients in a brand love recipe. The first ingredient is product quality, and that you're not going to get brand love if you don't have, you know, excellent products or services. The second ingredient, before we even get to this whole thing about getting the customer to think about it as a person, the second ingredient is customer experience. The actual experience of learning about the brand, buying it, using it, servicing it, the whole thing from A to Z, it has to at least be pleasant. And hopefully it is enjoyable. When I've done in my research, and I talk to people just about, is there anything that you love? Could be a brand, it could be an object, just anything that isn't a person. I've done many, many interviews for years about this sort of thing with people. Everything that people bring up always has a pleasurable aspect to it. And there's a reason for that. And that reason is intrinsic interest. So love is triggered by a kind of intrinsic enjoyment. And what intrinsic enjoyment means, it means the experience itself is pleasurable. It's analogous to chemistry on a date. If we go back to the dating stuff that we were talking about at the beginning. People sometimes say, oh, there was no chemistry on that date. Well, what does that mean? It means that it wasn't very fun. It was hard to make conversation. It was kind of boring. I felt awkward. I felt uncomfortable. If you go on a date and you have a really good time and conversation flows really easily, well, that's, you know, chemistry on the date. So it's the same with a product. If there is some sort of a product and it is really excellent in terms of its quality, but the experience that goes with it isn't itself enjoyable, then people will value that product. They'll think it's really good. I value my home insurance, right? But I don't love my home insurance because there's no pleasure that goes along with home insurance, right? So there's nothing there to make that emotional spark and create the chemistry. So if you're someone who works in the customer experience area, brand love is absolutely central to what you do, and it's central to the benefit you bring to your organization. Because without a positive customer experience, the highest quality product in the world is only going to be seen as a tool, you know, an instrumental tool for something. It's not going to generate emotional connection. And it's that emotional connection that research shows creates the brand loyalty and creates the pricing power.
It's extremely interesting because thinking about this customer experience piece, in simple words, the foundation must work before we start building up the brand and so on. And what you brought me to think about is the definition of Shep Eiken, a very well known CX professional in our field. He defines that experience should be amazing. And amazing are not the best top experience, but he defines amazing as a bit better than average, because then you're better than the other brands and you're a bit better, and therefore you can start building the foundation and having your customer. But now what we're discussing is about getting to the next level to create this brand love. And you mentioned that several times, and I would like to understand it. How can we measure brand love and how we can improve that then over time?
So I have a measure of brand love. It's sort of a generic measure that people can use. And it's just a series of questions that you can ask people. You could even just ask them, you know, how much do you love this brand? And it doesn't work as well. If you're trying to design a program for a major business, you want to measure things really accurately. But it's not terrible, you know, to just ask someone, how much do you love this brand? So one of the things I've done with quite a few companies is taken that generic sort of measure and customized it for their company. And that has, with those companies, you know, I have NDAs about exactly the details of it, but they're very pleased. It helps that measure and monitor this. And we all know, you know, that which is measured improves. So if you look, if you contact me, I'd be happy to send you a copy of the generic measure if you're interested in that. It's published and you can use it for academic research for free. You have to license it if you want to use it for commercial research. So one of the keys here to really building brand love is measuring so you can keep, you know what's going on and see if you're improving and seeing if what you're doing is having some sort of an effect. Beyond that, you know, I talked about this recipe. There's really a three-part recipe for building brand love, and that is, you know, product quality, which you all know already. Like everyone listening understands the importance of product quality. And I make this analogy sometimes to a cinnamon roll, right? So a cinnamon roll, if you want to make a cinnamon roll, product quality is the flour. It's like the main ingredient. It's the biggest thing. It makes up the bulk of it. But if that's all you have, it's not very interesting. It's just a pile of flour. So customer experience is all the good stuff. That's the sugar and the butter and the cinnamon and the milk. And that is what makes it delicious. And, you know, so you need that. And that is the next step. And then the third step is the yeast. Because if you don't have the yeast, it's not going to work. And what's interesting about yeast in a cinnamon roll is if you look at a cinnamon roll and you bite into it, you probably would never think there's yeast in there. If you're not a good baker, if you don't know how baking works, it would never occur to you that it's there, but the whole recipe won't work without it. And that's the third part is getting the customer to think about the brand as if it is a person. In the same way, even if you have the quality and even if you have the good customer experience, it's not going to work. You're not going to get the right chemical reactions going in the human brain if you don't have that aspect of personification for the brand or the product.
Thank you very much. I would have 1,000 additional questions, but taking care of your time and audience time, we are coming to the end. For the last 3 minutes in the extra time, I still have 3 questions for you. Fast forward, in 10 years from now, we are back on the CX Goalkeeper podcast. What we're discussing about?
I think we're talking about relationships that people have with company-owned, what we would now call a chatbot. I'm not sure if we'll still use the word chatbot at that time. But one of the first things that's going to be automated with AI are all the service personnel. And right now, the service personnel that you get, the AI-powered, you phone the airline and you talk to their recording, it's a hellishly awful experience. I don't know about you, but I will admit yelling into the phone on more than one occasion, you know, give me a human being. I can't take this, right? You're not answering. It's very frustrating. However, that is going to change quite rapidly. We're seeing amazing things out of AI-powered conversational programs. And we're very soon going to see a situation where you phone up the airline and it picks up immediately and says, hi, Aaron Ahuvia, you know, good to talk with you again. The last time you called, you were going to so-and-so. How was that trip? What can I help you with now? Right. And it's going to be just like talking, not just to a person, but a person who always has the right answer and remembers everything about you and knows all your preferences and, you know, is really keyed in. We're already seeing from people's relationships with chatbots how easy it is for people to fall in love with these AI programs in ways that they did not expect. People think that the fact that their conscious mind knows that it's not a person is going to prevent them from falling in love with this thing. But love is really, it's the property of your unconscious mind, right? You don't choose who you fall in love with that much. Love is primarily a function of your unconscious mind. And your unconscious mind has a very different idea about what a person is from what your conscious mind thinks. And if you're talking on the phone to someone and they're talking back to you, your unconscious mind is like, yeah, that's a person. Good. Right? So people are going to form these very intense and relationships with these service, sort of AI-powered service personnel. I'm not saying everyone's going to have a romantic love for them necessarily, but in the same way that you have a sense of perhaps a strong relationship with a bartender or someone who your doctor or a lawyer or whoever it is, you'll develop a strong relationship with this person as well. And that's going to lead to a lot of social issues about the potential of companies exploiting these relationships, exploiting people's emotional vulnerability. What are the responsibilities that comes with that? And you'll also have situations where customers react in emotional and irrational ways. They don't get what they want, and their love turns to hate. That famous hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. Well, that's true for women and men. And if there's a sense of a real emotional relationship, and then that goes bad, people can get very angry. And there is research on it. And customers can be very destructive when it happens. So I think this is going to emerge to be a big topic in the future.
It's really interesting, and it's a topic for one of the next episodes together, perhaps.
Let's that would have be a fun. Chat about yeah. it.
What's
yeah,
the
very
best,
good.
What's the best way to contact you and where we can find your book?
Go online to Dr. Brand Love. So you could be Dr. Brand Love or spell it out, Dr. Brand Love, and you'll get my website for speaking. I do a lot of keynotes, and you can contact me through that website. I'll be delighted to hear from anybody.
Thank you very much. And now it's the last question is Aaron's golden nugget. It's something that we discussed or something new to leave to the audience with.
I'll go for the review. The golden nugget is if your customer's brain is a factory, they've got a separate assembly line for people and a separate assembly line for objects. And emotional connections, whether you want to call it love, superfan, passion, commitment, attachment, whatever you want to call it, emotional connections are only available on the assembly line that produces human relationships. And you're never going to get there if you don't take that seriously and think about what that means for your brand.
Aaron, thank you very much for your time. I love this discussion, even if it's not a person, but it's personified by you. It was a great discussion. Thank you very much for your time.
Greg, it was really a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Aaron, please stay with me. To the audience, it's everything for today. If you have any questions, feel free to contact me. Feel free to contact Aaron. Please go to your bookstore and buy this outstanding book, The Things We Love. Our passion connect us and make us who we are. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share the word of mouth. Subscribe it. Share it. Until the next episode, please don't forget, we are not in a B2B or B2C business. We are in a human-to-human environment. Thank you.